Bedrosian throws to Sandberg, and the pitch is grounded to second base. Thompson has it, throws to first. It's over. 27 years of waiting have come to an end. The Giants have won the pennant.
Welcome back to Thompson to Clark. Brad and I are here. We're going to talk about that press conference that the Giants had last week to introduce Tony Vitello to the fans. We'll talk a little bit about the beginning of free agency. There were some gold gloves given out to Giants players. And we'll also talk about, maybe with a tear in our eye, the World Series.
Did that happen? I didn't even think the World Series actually happened this year.
You know, without even being snarky,
yeah,
that was the most interested I've been in a non-Giants World Series in forever, since I was a little kid.
Yeah, really. Yeah, I'd have to say, I know everybody said, hey, you know, was that possibly the greatest World Series ever or long time or whatever, blah, 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 blah. Still, for me, 1991, that's the one we always go back to. I don't know. I mean, it was a great World Series. It was, anytime you get seven games out of a World Series and comebacks, and the amount of extra innings, too, was absolutely insane. We got a lot of baseball. Wasn't that the most innings played in a World Series in I don't know how many years too? So we got a, if you like having extra baseball in October, you got a lot of that this year.
I was trying to do this exercise and see how many World Series matchups I could remember in the year that they happened since I started watching baseball. So I would start with 1984. That's the year that I remember.
Yeah.
That
I used to be able to start with 82 and go all the way up, and I don't remember where I lost it now.
So 84 is Tigers Padres, is that right?
Yeah, 84 is Tigers Padres. I'll go back a little bit. 82, because from what I remember, 82 was Cardinals Brewers.
Okay.
83 was Orioles. Oh man! See, now I'm starting to get gaps in my memory here. But 83 was Orioles and somebody else, and now I can't remember. But
okay,
but
then so 85 is Cardinals, and who did the
Cardinals?
Oh, Royals.
Yeah, that was the Dinkinger umpire blown call.
Right.
Yeah.
86, Red Sox and Mets.
Yeah, that was a great one.
87, Cardinals and... Did they play Royals?
87's Cardinals Twins.
Cardinals Twins, that's what it was. Yep. Okay. 1988 is Dodgers A's. Mm-hmm. 89 A's Giants.
Yeah.
90 A's Reds. 91 Twins again. That's when you said Twins and Braves.
Yeah, that was the big one. That's the one that was super memorable. One on a what would have been a sack fly, but the outfield was drawn way in, and 10th inning, 1-0.
I think Jack Morris
went 10 innings. I mean, that was, you know, an unbelievable series. Our boy Harveen, who's a friend of ours from back in the day, he's a huge Braves fan. That one killed him.
I mean, that, I feel like, you know, when you think of stars being created from something like that, like Kirby Puckett is a household name at that point.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
All right, so 1992 is, who's in 92? Is it the Braves again? Or no,
yep.
The Braves again?
Braves and Jays.
Braves and Blue Jays. There you go. Yep. 93 is Blue Jays and Phillies.
Yep. Yeah, that was the back-to-back Blue Jays.
94 is a trick question.
94 was the Expos and Indians, right? Could have been.
So then 95 is See, this is where it starts getting a little murky for me.
Yeah, yeah. I'll pick you up. 95 was Indians and Braves.
Braves, okay. Yeah. Is that Matt Williams in the World Series?
Yes, yeah.
96, Yankees.
That one was, I think, Yankees Braves, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
And then 97, Marlins and Indians.
Yeah, this is where it gets kind of for me, you know.
Well,
remember the older stuff.
I feel like we did a pretty good job. We got to 1998, yeah. So I'll take that one.
98 was right? Yankees and Padres. That was Bochy.
Okay,
right.
Yeah,
99 was Yankees again, and I don't remember that one. 2000 was Yankees Mets, right?
Yep.
2001, D-backs, right?
And then 2002, Giants, Angels, and we can stop.
And there's a Buster Olney book about that World Series. 2001, what was it called? The Last Night of the Yankees Dynasty.
Oh, really? I've never
heard of it. That's a good book. It's a really good book. I enjoyed it. I read it a long time ago, but it's a fun one.
So I thought I was going to do better with that exercise. But my point was going to be that I don't really remember the... Other than the Giants World Series, obviously, I don't remember them as clearly as I remember when I was a little kid, because it was a much bigger deal to us when we were little kids. Like, oh my gosh, the World Series, National League against American League. You didn't get that every other series, right? Like you get today. So that World Series reminded me of some of the World Series of my youth, where it felt like baseball was the most important thing, the most important sport. I feel like baseball dominated, even though the TV ratings won't necessarily agree with everything. I feel like this postseason, baseball dominated the NFL. I mean, I've been really bored with the NFL, though the national public would disagree. And the NBA just started, so we'll see what happens. But I feel like this is like, oh my gosh, this is what baseball felt like when I was a little kid, where it was like way more important than it is from a day-to-day basis today.
I feel that way with the first two rounds of the NFL playoffs. Those to me are fun and exciting. Then you get to the championship games, and they're usually good matchups, not always great games. Then you get to the Super Bowl. And it's just an event.
It's like 50-50 on whether or not the game is good with the Super Bowl.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
All right, so let's talk about Tony Vitello here. I guess the question for you, and the reason why I'm asking this is because I also am going to answer this question, is the press conference, his introduction to the fan base, did it change your opinion of what you thought about the move in any way?
No, I don't think it changed. I mean, maybe a tiny bit, more towards, a little bit of uh-oh. I don't know if that makes sense. No, I mean, not a lot, but a little bit more of like a, oh, okay. I thought we're going to be talking a little bit more about, you know, what the team identity was going to look like, coaching staff, philosophies, this and that. I think it was just more of a, you know, for the fan base and for the media to get to see the guy and talk to the guy and find out, well, he's not a psycho. Like, you know, people think he's going to be a psycho in the dugout and wear a fur coat and jump into the stands.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this was just more of like, hey, here's Tony. He's a regular dude. Favorite thing from it was probably the part where he talked about how he would adapt. You know, he would talk to Bryce Eldridge one way, you know, or communicate with him one way on one level and talk to a Scherzer and a Verlander in a different way. And I was hoping that, and I kind of knew that he was going to be that type of guy, because I don't think Buster's going to hire a guy that's going to be rah-rah in your face, you know, punching back in the day, punching the phone box that hangs in the dugout. He's just going to be, you know, he's going to communicate. He's going to do what he needs to do. But no, I don't think it changed a whole lot for me.
So there's definitely that power of personality there. You can tell he leans on his instincts and his savviness and what he believes his players need to hear in that moment. Like, he fundamentally believes that he gets that piece of it. I would have liked to hear less of, I'm not the smartest guy in the room. Yeah. Like, I think that can work in a specific market. I'm not sure that works here. And not to say that everyone needs to be the super high IQ, intelligent, blah, blah, blah. I just see through stuff like that a lot. To me, it's just like, oh, you're overcompensating for something. You're trying to be liked by saying that. You're trying to maybe take a little bit of pressure off or whatever. And maybe he's just being honest. Maybe he's like, look, I'm not an X's and O's guy necessarily. That's not my strength. But to me, what I wanted to hear was, I'm just good at my job and here's why. Because that's that's what the fans were kind of wondering about, which is, okay, college to the pros, what's different? What is the same? How is he going to adjust? Like, where are we at? Should we feel like, you know, this is a year or two too early and he really needed some MLB experience? And even Greg Johnson has said in some interviews that, you know, he was kind of like wondering why Vitello would even want to come to the bigs considering how much money he made at Tennessee. He's like, look, I think he said that he told Buster, this guy makes as much money as major league managers. Why is he going to want to leave? And we're going to have to invest a lot of money just to get him. Like, is this like a proven thing? So all of those things are fine, but I guess I wanted to come away from that presser thinking like, oh man, Buster and Zach are right. Like, this guy is the man. Like, he's the perfect person to lead this team, because as we know, we just watched the World Series, the Giants, in order to compete with the Dodgers, they're going to have to maybe outplay their roster a little bit. They're going to have to overcompensate for some of the things, and maybe some of that is the power of personality by Vitello. Yeah. I just would have liked to feel more like we made like the single smartest hire in the world, and less like we hired a inspirational speaker to be the coach. And I'm not trying to undervalue what he brings to the table, but the fact of the matter is, me, like I'm guessing 85% of the Giants fan base doesn't watch college baseball. So I have no idea of all of the things that he's done. The only thing I know is what I've seen in Twitter clips. So, you know, I go into this higher. It's not like we were jumping up and doing, you know, high fives with each other when Bob Melvin was hired. We knew what Bob Melvin was, and he was kind of the stitch to whatever the next thing was going to be. And I guess the last time, you know, when they hired Kapler, I felt sort of similar, like, okay, like, what is this guy? Who is this guy? And I'm open-minded. Look, if Vitello comes out here and he's just like, he's got whatever it takes. I think they've called it the it factor. If he's got that it factor and all of a sudden this team just loves playing for him, I'm 100% in, but I just can't get there yet right now based off of what I've seen. And I think that's fine. Like, I don't think we have to just be 100% in just because Buster said so. So that's kind of where I'm at. I'm in the shallow end of the pool right now. I'm kind of just waiting and seeing.
You know, that all makes sense. I agree with that. One thing that was a little off-putting was near the beginning of the press conference when he talked about, you know, he was here in the major leagues and he can see himself going back to college someday. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, it's a little, we're in the now right now. We want a guy who wants to maybe be here for like 10 years, you know, and again, in 10 years, he's not even going to be 60. So, I mean, is he going to get burned out in the majors after 10 years? It's possible. Is he a lifetime manager? We have no idea yet. We don't know much about what he is and who he's going to be. But I think you hit on something. Now, for me, all it took to say that, yes, this is the guy, Zach and Buster nailed it, is for Buster to, and I said this last time, and maybe it's simplistic, but you know, for Buster to put his stamp on it.
Yeah.
For him to talk to him, to lure him, to, you know, keep calling him and interviewing him and talking to him to the point where he wanted to hire him. Buster's not a, you know, I don't think he's a you know, snap decision type of guy. I mean, we saw that with the roster moves this year. We didn't have many roster moves. Yeah. This is not, yeah, it's not the Farhan era.
Yeah.
I felt like some of Farhan's moves, like, you know, okay, we got rid of Gabe Kapler. Now we got to get Bob Melvin. We got to go the exact opposite way.
Right. Overcompensating for whatever we just did.
Yeah. And I don't think that's what's happening here too, because I feel like, again, I think Buster sees the future of baseball, and he sees the future being a guy like Tony, some of the college coaches. And again, we've discussed this before. These are guys that are going to be coming through the ranks in 10 years. The majority of people in Major League Baseball are going to be guys who played through college baseball, you know, not counting the international guys, but guys who have played college baseball, and he's going to know what that era was like, because he was there for 8 years and longer. So yeah, I think for me, it was just getting that buy-in from Buster. And I was like, well, I'm in. I mean, I'm a Giants fan. I love Buster. I think he's, you know, done nothing but good for us over the years. Last year was tough, but again, I always go back to the fact that Bob Melvin, he worked with Bob Melvin. Bob Melvin was not his pick. This is his first pick. Now, going forward, this is going to be, and maybe one more draft, this is going to be the Buster Posey era. We're kind of working. This is like Taylor Swift's first album, right? it was good. We got a glimpse. But then when the second album came out, you go, oh, well, that's Taylor Swift. Okay, now we see who she's becoming. So
yeah.
Buster and Taylor, that's a combo.
Yeah, I'm open-minded. We try to be as open-minded as we can on this show. I'm not against it. I'm not against people having strong personalities. I'm not against people making mistakes in public. I'm not against people experimenting with stuff and seeing how things go. So I come into this like with an open mind with Vitello. But I wanted to like watch that presser and go like, I'm 100% in. And you know what I can relate it to? So the Warriors, right before they got good, they had Mark Jackson, former New York Knicks point guard and commentator, as their head coach. And so they're about to make this change. What in a funny story, actually a tremendous story for me, my dad and I had gone to see the Warriors color commentator at that time, Jim Barnett, speak. I had a buddy who invited me. He's like, oh, I know you're a giant Warriors fan. Why don't you come and listen to him speak? And so we're there, and you know, I kind of tell my dad, I'm like, I'm gonna go to Jim and I'm gonna have a conversation with him. I don't know how, I'm not sure yet, because we're at like tables and there's dinner, and so I'm just kind of, you know, I gotta be brave and make my way. And so I find where he's at, and I eventually sit down with him. And my thing is, my hook here is, Jim's eating and he's at this table with a bunch of people, and everyone's going to ask questions. And if I can answer the question, then Jim doesn't have to answer the question. He just keeps eating. So I'm ripping off answering every single question like these people are asking Jim. And he's like, yep, you're right. Yep. Yep. And so eventually he kind of trusts me a little bit. And so he starts telling me about what's really going down with the Warriors, and Mark Jackson's kicking people out of coaches meetings and this and that. And he's like, yeah, I don't think this is going to end well. And so not that long after, they fire Mark Jackson. And then Steve Kerr's name starts to, he kind of, it just starts being like the name, like it's either Steve Kerr or Stan Van Gundy. And there may have been a couple others. And when I heard Steve Kerr talk about what he wanted out of the team, he basically said, this team is already good. Like, I just need the offense to do X and the defense to do Y. And I think this team could compete for a championship. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm in, right? And that isn't really what Vitello did. And I wonder, I mean, maybe it's hard to do that because the Dodgers are the team that has won that division so many times. So maybe, you know, you may be doing empty promises and maybe the fans can see through that. And even Greg Johnson, I saw, said that in an interview. He's like, we didn't want him to come in and say that we're just going to beat the Dodgers next year. And yeah, I was right. I was like, I get it, but that's what we want. Like, we want to beat the Dodgers.
I get that, but there's time. You know what I mean? It's such a long off season. And I think we're going to hear that at some point way before spring training. But I get it. I get it. I feel like if it would have come out in the press conference that, you know, I'm here to take on the Dodgers, it might have been like, now we're a little hyper-focused.
Yeah.
We got the Padres. We got the Diamondbacks.
It would have been nice if he said, oh, yeah, you know, when I was younger, I hated Tommy Lasorda too. I get it. Like, I would have loved, I would have been like, all right, I'm in.
Yeah, exactly. You
know, whatever.
But yeah, like, Mike Marshall, that guy's a jerk.
I'm mostly joking, but you know, that it's kind of interesting what he said versus, you know, what we wanted to hear. And the reason is because this team has essentially been the same thing since 2021. They've been a 500 baseball team, no more, no less, no improvement. And so now we're looking. Now, you said something that's very interesting and that I'm kind of locked in on. Like, this is maybe my favorite thing about him.
Yeah.
Is he has an ability to connect with young people. That doesn't necessarily mean that the Giants roster is built that way, by the way.
Right.
The Giants have a lot of vets. But one thing that I saw, quote, owner Greg Johnson said is that the player development piece has been a little lacking for them. So if you have a coach or you have a manager who can connect with young people and who can help young players develop, like, I think of certain guys on this roster, and let's say we run back the same roster. Now, we know that's not going to happen, but let's say this roster is going to be the exact same next year. Bryce Eldridge, Elliot Ramos, Luis Matos, Jung-Hoo Lee, those are young players who, if they took a step in the right direction, this baseball team would be so much better than they were this year. Yeah. And if that is what is, you know, maybe we can't guess that that's going to happen, but let's say, you know, that is the trajectory, then you're like, okay, great. And then if you get the same performance from Adamas and Chapman and Devers, and we would hope a little bit better. Like, your team is improved. We talk about the pitching because he was a pitching coach back in the day. You talk about the young pitching. Hayden Burnsong, Landon Roop. You know, Logan Webb is the ace, but it's not like he's an old dude. You know, he is still young enough to be like fiery and pumped up and ready to go. Like, I can see some incremental improvements from the young pieces on the roster, which could elevate this team to 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 extra wins. Now it becomes Buster's job to elevate the team even more so by plugging in the right pieces, chasing the right trades, chasing the right free agents, because they're going to have to sign not just one starting pitcher. They're probably going to have to sign multiple starting pitchers in this offseason. So how do you rebuild your pitching staff over an offseason? Same with, you know, bullpens are a little bit easier to reconstruct, but you know, the field, their positional players, we wouldn't necessarily be fired up for everybody to basically come back. And then you just put Bryce Eldridge back in, that you would hope for some other improvements. But if that was the case, you're like, okay, like, that wasn't the piece that I'm necessarily worried about. It's this, the starting pitching and such. So yeah. I could see, like, that is my favorite part about this signing is, or this hiring, is that he does seem to have an association or a relationship or a way to engage with younger players. And I think that could be helpful. And I hope that they have a really good plan about which coaches to put around him. It was in the news today as well, that they plan on bringing in Bruce Bochy in some sort of advisor role like they have with Dusty Baker. So he will have access to both of those guys. Buster will have access to both of those guys too. So I think that's a positive. And yeah, so, you know, we're not going to answer really any questions right now on November 4th because, yeah. You know, spring training's not for another, you know, 4.5 months. But it's kind of, you know, when you have a season where you miss the playoffs, this is the time to talk about this stuff. From here on out, you know, until spring training, we're just looking at how to improve this team and how to improve this roster and whether or not we're going to be jacked about it or not.
I think talking about the youth movement too, I think a lot of times too, just from observing, and it's a long season, 140 something games in the minors, 162 in the majors, guys get drafted out of college after playing 50 to 60 games. And all of a sudden, you know, they're playing this long grind and they've got to figure out, how do I maintain my love for the game at the same time riding the bus, looking at this as a job, reading analytics, trying to figure out how to get more elevation to my swing, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. And I think Tony's going to help a lot with keeping the love for the game part of it going with the young guys, because they're going to come up, they're going to be overwhelmed. Bryce Eldridge is going to be overwhelmed. You know, he had a little taste of the majors, but if he starts out at first base, game one of 2026, he's going to be overwhelmed. It's going to be a long season, a long haul. And I think Tony can keep those guys kind of engaged and maybe get a little bit of their love for the game, how it was in college, get a little bit of that back. We saw Drew Gilbert. He gave it back to a lot of guys last season for a good month there. You know, a lot of exciting baseball. So I think that's going to be the biggest part that's going to help, is getting that love for the game and the excitement, kind of feeding into the crowd too, because the crowd at Oracle is always really good. And if you could feed into that, you definitely can carry that for a while.
You know that wellness goal you set at the start of the year? It's not too late to stick with it and make your future self proud, especially with the all-in-one nutrition shake from Ka'Chava. With 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and more. No fillers, no nonsense, just the highest quality ingredients. Stick with your wellness goals. Go to Ka'Chava.com and use code NEWS for 15% off. That's Ka'Chava.com, code NEWS.
All right, let's move on here and let's talk a little bit about what is upcoming this season or this off season, which is, I guess, free agency starts on Thursday.
Yeah. I actually went through the calendar and I added it to my personal iOS calendar. You know how it goes. It's always like, oh, this started today and this started and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Free agency begins Thursday. And that's the same day they announced the Silver Slugger Awards, both Thursday and Friday. So probably AL Thursday, NL Friday, or vice versa. And then the MLB GM meetings are in Vegas starting on Monday. I'll be in Vegas on Monday. So I'm going to see if I can find Buster somewhere. And Buster and Zach, and ask them some questions, man. I don't think I'm going to be able to find them. Even if I do, they're going to be like, get this guy.
No, I don't know. See, what you got to do is you lead with buying them a drink. You're like, you're one of my favorite players, and you know, we follow you and we do a podcast. I'm gonna buy you a drink. And
yeah,
you're like, just order, you know, we'll if Buster's like, I'll have the Johnny Walker Blue. We're like,
pick something else.
It's a podcast. It's not like, you know, this is not like a real radio show.
I'll tell him, no, you can buy me that.
Actually, have you ever had Johnny Walker Blue?
I never have. No,
neither.
I haven't even watched any reviews of it or seen any videos of some like tastings of it or anything. I've none whatsoever.
Do we know why it's so expensive?
I don't. And I'm not sure if it's even a blended scotch. Let me find out. I'm not that familiar with Johnny Walker.
Yeah, I mean, I've had the black and the red, but that's like right. Not the expensive stuff.
Right. It's going to make me, it wants to know that I'm 21 for the website. I'm an old man. I'm definitely 21. Scotch whiskey from, yeah, it's a blended scotch. So even the blue label is a blended scotch.
Interesting.
It's not even a, you know, single barrel. It's not, anything. I'm sure it probably tastes fantastic. I just don't know much about it. There's also an 18 year, there's the black label, gold label, but, no, I don't think I've ever had, in all honesty, I don't know if I've ever had any Johnny Walker products before.
Well, the next time you come to town for a concert / Giants game, we will have to find a, do they still call them watering holes?
We do.
Okay, we'll have to find a watering hole, and we'll order some Johnny Walker Blue just to try it. Maybe we'll make a YouTube short about us trying our Johnny Walker Blue and saying whether it's worth it. Okay, so
Monday night, the first night of the GM meetings, I'm going to be at the Vegas Golden Knights hockey game with my wife.
Oh, there you go.
And I told her, I said, if that's their first night in town, they probably got comped some boxes.
Yeah.
You know, some of these GMs from around the country. So there's a chance there's going to be some Major League Baseball action at the hockey game, but we'll see.
Yeah. No, that'll be really cool. Hopefully. I mean, not just, you know, hopefully you'll just be able to point out to your wife, oh, look, there's so-and-so. And she'll be like, yeah. How do you know who these old guys exactly. are? They're just walking around in suits with bald spots. Why do you know them?
Right.
So I brought that up because the Giants have three free agents. And I wanted to do a, like, yes, no, maybe so kind of thing.
Okay.
On if you thought any of these free agents would be brought back. And I guess we have to start with one Justin Verlander in his age 42 season. He made $15 million last year. I would say for half of the season, he very much deserved it. And maybe for the other half, he didn't necessarily. But, you know, it was kind of cool to have him on the team.
Yeah.
And I don't think it hurt them in any way for him to be there. So I was fine with him. Pitching for the most part, but do you think he comes back to the team next year?
You know, I think he comes back, but with the caveat that it's possible it's him and Scherzer.
Mm-hmm.
We could see that they were on the same team in New York with the Mets at one point. I think that's a possibility. Again, they both have to, and I think Verlander has pretty much made it clear he likes 1-year deals going forward mm-hmm. for the rest of his career. He doesn't.
Yeah, you don't got to be locked into anything.
Yeah, and he can kind of feel it out. Does he want a better chance at the World Series? Yeah. Could I see him probably signing with the Dodgers? Yeah. I mean, you know how that goes.
Maybe that's what has Scherzer fall in our lap, is that they're like, Dodgers are like, no, we don't want more than one old guy. We'll take one old guy. You guys can have the other old guy.
Yeah. And that's the thing, too. I think it would be detrimental to the pitching staff if the Giants had Scherzer and Verlander, because then you've got two guys who are very old, you know, in pitching years, and they're both on the same staff, and you're trying to get longevity and innings out of guys, and I don't think that's going to work that well. But, you know, short answer, I'd say, yeah, I could see him coming back.
I'm going to go maybe so with JV, but I would like it. You know, I think he's a valuable – he's probably more valuable to the team with this new manager than he would be with the way that the Giants were doing things last year, because Vitello's obviously interested in, like, you know, he's doing things differently. And so to have that veteran voice in you know, in that clubhouse from the pitcher's perspective, I think would be valuable. And Scherzer the same way. And plus, they're buddies. Like, he and Vitello are like buddies. Like, they were, he was on the coaching staff when Scherzer was in college, which is kind of crazy when you think about it.
Yeah. When I first heard that, I go, that makes sense, but holy moly.
Yeah, how old is Scherzer? Like, is he in his older 30s?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
So, because Vitello's only like
maybe,
yeah, like only like 8 or 9 years older than this dude.
Yeah,
so.
He's 50. Well, he's 57. No, 47.
47.
Sorry.
He's 47, younger than us.
47. Yeah, yeah, he's 47.
So he would have been in his 20s while Scherzer was in college, which is kind of crazy.
Jeez.
All right. What about Wilmer Flores? Yes, no, or maybe so.
I'd love to see him back, but I'm going to go with no. There really isn't a role for him at this point. And this is also going to apply to another one of the free agents you're going to bring up. But, I mean, first base is kind of logjammed now. Mm-hmm. And I think we have too many players who are DH type of players. Mm-hmm. Wilmer's replaceable at this point of his career with you know, a lot of other free agents out there who are younger. So I'm going to have to say no. I hate to say no, but I got to say no.
I'm with you. Wilmer was a good Giant. We've had him for several years now, and, you know, he's been clutch in many opportunities at the plate for them. But he is aging out as far as what he does and what they need. So I'm no with you. I think we're going to differ on Dominic Smith, though. I'm a yes on Dominic.
You know, I'm a no, no, maybe so, kind of in that area. And the only reason I am is because, again, where are you going to play him? Mm-hmm. You know, I Devers is going to be your DH while Eldridge is at first. And again, Eldridge may not start in the majors. He may be in AAA at the beginning of the season. But again, Dom Smith's not going to want to sign to the Giants if he knows that, well, this kid is going to come up, and then what happens to me? Do I get traded? This way he's going to get to pick in free agency where he wants to go, and he worked himself into probably a pretty nice contract. I mean, he's a Pittsburgh Pirates type of player. He'll get a nice deal from the Pirates for like 3 years. You're not going to win. Maybe you do. The Reds, you know, those types of teams, the Reds who are close. But I don't see him starting with us. I don't see him signing with us only to get moved. That's the only problem.
Yeah, so I think he does for two reasons. And this is kind of a difference between Dom and Wilmer. Dom's left-handed, for one. Left-handed bat, right. Off the bench, for one. That is first and foremost. Second, like you said, Bryce is still a little bit of a question mark. I think I would expect him to make the team out of camp, but you never know because he's so young. And I think Dom, you signed Dom with the idea that you have a choice on when to bring Bryce up or not. And so if you have Dom, you could plug him in, and if it's like a month or two and then Bryce is ready, then you bring him up. And Dom can also play right field if you need it. It's not going to be his best position, but there are going to be nights when Bryce is going to need a night off. There's going to be nights when Bryce gets moved to DH because Devers needs a night off, and then you plug Dom Smith in. If Dom Smith has a possibility of starting and playing 150 games for a team, then I'm like, okay, he has that opportunity. He should go after that opportunity because it'll probably mean more stability as well. But if the Giants come back and they're like, yeah, 2-year deal, you know, whatever the price is, we value you as a someone in the clubhouse, you're a winning type of player, you're going to get opportunities here just because everybody's going to get an opportunity. I do think he would be of value. So I'm saying yes, but totally. If he finds an opportunity where he's an everyday player, of course he's going to take it, I think.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'd love to have him back. And if he would be relegated to a bench role, you know, lefty off the bench late in the game, and he thinks the Giants are going to go places and he likes the build of the team, he could very well choose us, which would be awesome if Buster wants to go after him.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about, and, you know, we'll be talking free agency all the way through this, you know, through these next couple of months. It'll be interesting to see how early the Giants get in on the free agency, though, because I saw some numbers today for Kyle Tucker that make me believe that they're not even gonna like really.
Yeah, those know. Are big numbers.
Yeah, I was like, well, 12 years, 400 million, huh? Wow. You know what contract that I thought didn't look too terrible was Cody Bellinger, though there's going to be a lengthy number of years on that one too. But can he play right field? That would be my question.
Yeah.
Or could he move some? Could he move Jung-Hoo? I don't know. I think they would have to do some shuffling defensively. But I think, like, I looked at his contract, I was like, oh, it's not as crazy as I thought. But he probably is completely fine playing with the Yankees. He probably likes it there. So,
yeah.
But yeah, we'll see. Because I think, you know, I think there are a lot of pitchers, and I'm not talking about the top of the line guys. There are probably some pitchers on 2 or 3 year deals that are probably more the Giants' speed, but I don't know. I think the problem has been we just can't get the guys to take the money that and compete with the biggies. So maybe you don't do that this year because you got the guy in Devers, you got the guy who you were chasing anyways, and so maybe you fill out a little bit more of the depth and just go smarter with your money in that way. Just get the secondary guys that you want and not wait to get the only the guys that are left. So I do. It'll be interesting to see what that strategy is. So I'm looking forward to that about who they think will be that depth and could. I mean, they do need a right fielder though, right? They don't really have a right fielder. So
yeah, and starting pitching. I mean, if you're going to go after the starting pitching too, you kind of see. You know, early. So it was December 7th when the Giants signed Willy Adames last year. They made their big splash. I don't know if you're going to get a starting pitcher that early. Usually starting pitching is going to kind of shop themselves around a little bit more. They go a little bit later, but they also like to know where they're going to be so they can get their routine down, where they're going to be. Are they going to be in Florida? Are they going to be in Arizona? Mm-hmm. Plus, you got the World Baseball Classic this year, so spring training, I think, starts just a touch earlier. It's going to be kind of – yeah, that's fine. 121 days away. I'm going to put a countdown on my phone, but yeah, we're only
– Wait, is Shohei pitching for Japan again?
He is. Oh yeah, Shohei's pitching and Yamamoto as well.
Oh, my God. Yamamoto's arm's going to fall off.
No, go ahead. Pitch as much as you need to. Please.
All right. We'll quickly talk about the gold gloves. It was nice to see Logan Webb get his first gold glove, and Patty Bales picked up another one.
Yeah, that I don't know when that guy's not going to win one. I mean, it'll be interesting with the challenge system,
right,
this year. But again, with only getting two challenges, because I watching the playoffs, there were a couple times I thought, "Wow, do you challenge here? It's the first inning,
mm-hmm.
base is loaded, and you took a called strike three. Do you challenge here? Do you know?" Enough that you are 100% sure that you're challenging that pitch. So that's going to be, so it'll be interesting to kind of see how that plays out, but I don't think that's going to affect with two challenges per team. I don't think that's going to affect his frame rate a ton, you know?
And you saw the list of the Cy Young Award top three, and you were pretty frustrated that Logan Webb was not on that list.
Yeah, I didn't like it. And then I put that on, I replied to that on Instagram, and some guy tore me apart.
Did he?
Yeah, I was like, take it easy, dude. He was like, oh, 3.22 ERA, 1.24 whip, and with like a couple of crying face emojis. I'm like, dude led the league in innings pitched and strikeouts. If you want to go with ERA and whip for the Cy Young, you know, you come on. Plus, When did we start hating guys for throwing 200 innings? I mean, you know, guys.
He's a unicorn in that way.
He is. Guys used to throw 300 innings. Remember when we had that when we were kids? You guys get to the 300 inning mark. You're like, man, you got 300 innings. He's a workhorse. Now you get 200 and you're, you know, that's too many innings. His ERA is too high. But yeah, the National League Cy Young finalists are Christopher Sanchez, Paul Skeens, and Yamamoto. Again, none of those guys even touched the innings that that Webb had. And I know innings pitched isn't, you know, the Cy Young Award, but when you pitch innings and you and then you lead the league in that, and then you lead the league in strikeouts as well, you're not leading the league in strikeouts just because you pitched that many innings. How many times have we seen guys throw 180 innings and strike out only 100 batters? I mean, it happens all the time. So yeah, I was a little chafed by that, but whatever. They'll never get it right. You know, that's the whole thing. All of these awards, they rarely get it exactly 100% right.
Yeah, I was looking at Skeens because he's so dominating, and he had 187 innings pitched. 1.97 ERA after last year, 1.96. Pretty tremendous.
He's deserving. I think Webb should be number three or number four at least, but
yeah. So I didn't really pay attention. I mean, Yamamoto had, and we'll let's use this as a segue to talk about the World Series. Yamamoto, he wasn't quite Bumgarner,
right?
But that dude, he really showed out for his team. Almost picking up Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah.
Interestingly. And the extra inning games. What was that, game three?
Yeah, game three. Yep.
So Ohtani is supposed to throw game four. And this game is going into, I don't remember what inning it was, 15 or 16. And I was talking to Brian and his friends. We were like on the headsets playing NBA 2K, but also kind of watching the game at the same time. And I said, there's no way Ohtani warms up because they are so protective of him. They don't want to throw him in this game because he needs like his rest and he needs everything to be perfect to throw game four. He's not even going to warm up. I said, but I bet you Yamamoto starts warming up because he's that dude. And then the next inning, he starts warming up. Now, they didn't have to use him.
Right.
But I was like, wow, this guy is nails, man. Like, he is so in tune to what it takes to win this thing. And I'm not saying Ohtani isn't, but Ohtani is kind of like you have to be a little bit more delicate with him because of the elbow thing, the Tommy John thing. They didn't really stretch him out that much this year. Maybe he'll stretch out a little bit more next year. But anytime he pitches, you risk taking his bat out of the lineup. And if you take Ohtani's bat out of the lineup, the Dodgers are closer to the Giants than anything else, right? One bat is so valuable in that lineup. And so I was just so impressed with Yamamoto. Just like that, he pitched fantastically. But just him getting up in that game on 2 days rest or whatever, just to like say, I can do this if we need it. I was so impressed with that. And then for him to come in the last game, that was not quite Bumgarner again, but it's kind of the same mentality. And I respected that so much because they needed it. They did not even go to their actual bullpen for that game.
Right. And they needed every ounce of everything from everybody in that series. And to get that from Yamamoto at the very end was really impressive. Painful to say, right?
Yeah. I don't know. You know, what's funny is we did a video of when Yamamoto signed with the Dodgers.
Yeah,
and you know, a lot of our of our bitter Giants fan videos are us like tongue-in-cheek being super negative about stuff, but it's just because we just don't like the Dodgers. That is really, exactly. You know, there's nothing to do with Yamamoto, but I think you had made the point of like,
he's probably a nice guy. Sit down.
Yeah.
He's probably a nice guy.
What keeps getting called out in that video, we have a lot of comments on that video, by the way, was I think you said something to the effect of, well, if he's willing to be in Ohtani's shadow, you know, maybe he doesn't want that spotlight necessarily. Yeah. And so there's lots of people going like, oh, I thought you said he didn't want the spotlight. He wanted to take it easy. He wanted to be on the easy way. I was like, was like, come on, guys. You guys don't, you guys don't get the joke. You don't get
It kind of flew over their heads. He doesn't, I can still say though, he doesn't have main character energy like Madison Bumgarner. Though.
Yes. Yes.
That was main character. I'm coming out there. I'm getting down from my horse. I'm going to get up on the mound. I'm going to shoot you guys down. I'm going to walk out of here with the trophy.
You know, maybe now this is me giving advice to Yamamoto for next year.
Oh, he'll take it.
Gets on the bump game one. And he's just like, I'm going nine. Like, don't even warm any of these relievers up. And he says that like in the press conference at the beginning of the game, and he just blows a snot rocket at somebody randomly. Like, that's what it would take for him to get that main character energy. Like, he's got that mentality. That mentality.
It kind of almost felt, and you know, hey, the Dodger fans are going to knock us. That's fine. That's what we're here for. Hey, it's a rivalry. This just felt like a corporate win. It felt like if the Blue Jays would have won the World Series, it would have felt more like a, you know, like an 04 Red Sox winning the World Series, the 2010 Giants winning the World Series, a bunch of, you know, misfits and guys just thrown together in a room and found ways to like each other and wrestled on the side and punched each other out just for fun, and then got out there and then won the World Series. So that's what I was hoping for the Blue Jays, just because I liked that energy a little bit more. I just felt like the Dodgers energy is a little bit more corporate, and it wasn't just didn't excite me as much.
And, you know, you gotta, there is some of this to me where the Blue Jays put themselves in position to close at home. And they failed to do so, which I'm sure the decision makers are probably still thinking about, like, how did that happen? And I think it kind of comes down a lot to fundamental baseball, because I think if the Blue Jays lacked one thing specifically, it was they made some really dumb moves on the bases. And then because they made some really dumb moves on the bases, it caused them to be super conservative with a chance to win it. And I'm not sure that's when you want to be super conservative. Like, if you have a chance to win it by hook or by crook, you got to score. And of course, I'm talking about the Dalton Varsho ground ball to Miguel Rojas, where Rojas either slipped or he was caught in between hops, and he still was able to make a throw to throw out IFK at the plate. And, you know, in real time, I did not think about how slow it took IFK to get there, because he was the pinch runner for Bo Bichette.
Right.
But as I thought about it, and as you started to see, like, a lot of the screenshots of how close he was to the base, and then you have the Blue Jays team saying, yeah, you know, that was what he was supposed to do. He was supposed to be close to the bag because they got doubled off to lose the previous game in the ninth inning.
Yeah.
And so all of those things kind of are there, which cause some of this other stuff to happen. But still, I don't know that that was the time to be conservative on the bags. I think once he saw, you know, because it's not like that was the cleanest play, right? If that's just
right
at Rojas, boom, throw him out, like, easy play. No, that play was hard. But you know what? That I don't fault that play as much as what I fault in Varsho's at bat, though. That dude needed to hit a fly ball.
Yeah.
Yeah. His first swing on Yamamoto was his normal swing, and he hit the ball hard. He hit like a, you know, a ground ball foul. And I thought, you know what? He is not trying to hit a fly ball here. And then he got two strikes down, and then he grounded out. So it was like a bunch of things had to happen. But again, going back to fundamental baseball, I would have liked to see Varsho try and hit that ball in the air, because that's what you're supposed to do in that moment.
Yeah, and Yamamoto was living down in the zone too, because he wanted the ground ball. And like you said, it just kind of didn't feel like Varsho felt that moment of like, look, I got to get bat head on ball and drive up. I got to lift here. Even if I pop something up on the infield, at least I'm getting something in the air, because again, a clean play and a little bit of a harder ground ball to Rojas, and that's a double play.
Yeah.
And they're out of the inning, so, yeah.
Yeah, and then I think it was the very next at-bat, one of our favorite players, Ernie Clement, who says cheese when he smiles, he knew what the moment was, and he put a ride on that ball. And I forget who the left fielder was, but the Dodgers made a great move by putting Páez out there in center, and Páez tramples over his own guy to make the play. And I was like, damn, that kind of stuff. They made the right plays to win that game. And
that's crazy.
You know, as much as we hate it, you just kind of got to go, yep, that's what it is right now. And that's what the Giants they have to look at that as like the goal. That's the North Star, which is what the Dodgers are. And how do you attack those guys? What are the things that the Giants can do better than the Dodgers with the way that the rosters are built? I think one of those things that they can do better is something we've talked about all along, like be more aggressive on the base paths, defensively, just, be so much better defensively. And if you believe in your starting pitching and defense wins, that is one way to beat that team. Because if you saw the way that those million-dollar bats looked in the postseason, that was the time for the Dodgers to get beat, because those bats were not there. Like Mookie Betts, I was about to start calling him automatic out Betts, because this dude could not buy a hit. But hey, they want it, and you just got to tip your cap and hope that everyone on the team next year gets the coronavirus, and and they just all miss a bunch of games.
Gout.
Yeah, Otani just has like a black toe for like 75% of the year. That's how I see them. But at the same time, you can go, hey, they want it. Giants need to just be that much better next year.
Yeah, or the clubhouse guy just doesn't do a great job of cleaning the jocks, and fungus goes through the clubhouse and things happen.
Yeah, somebody's got to pay him to throw some itching powder in there. And...
yes.
All right, that was fun. So I know. So you're out next week.
I'm out next week. Yeah.
So what I might do instead is I might do a Giants Dodgers with my buddy Draven. I know he's chomping at the bit to come talk about
a little post mortem.
His team winning. He also is very interested in Vitello himself, because he keeps track of the Giants as a Dodgers fan. He keeps track of the Giants just like we keep track of the Dodgers. So I think we will probably do something with him. If not later this week, at least next week. So we will have some Giants talk in this feed. And I guess last thing is Niners and Rams this weekend, man.
Yeah, I'm going to be in Vegas on Sunday. I think it's going to be 80 degrees. Our place where we're staying has one of those pools with a bar that has a gigantic TV screen over it. So I'm hoping they got the game on out there. If not, I'll be sitting by the pool with a beer, just watching it on the phone and chillaxing. So yeah, this is a big one, man, because everybody's got six wins except for the Cardinals. But Rams, Seahawks, Niners all have six wins. Niners got three losses, and I think the Seahawks and Rams have two.
Yep.
So anytime you get a division game like this, and anytime you get a rematch like this, and it's in Santa Clara, right?
Yeah, you guys owe us because we went down to L.A. and we took one. So I'm sure that McVay wasn't too happy about losing to Shanahan on his own turf.
I know. And the Rams are firing on all cylinders right now. Haven't given up more than 10 points in the last three games. So I think McVay is probably scheming up some fun stuff, and Matthew Stafford right now drinking from the fountain of youth. I don't know what's going on. Jeez, he's got like 18 touchdowns and two interceptions. It's going nuts out there.
Puka's questionable, but I feel like every time he's on the field, he's questionable. So I feel like he's playing no matter what.
He's going to play. He'll play with a broken rib and one of his legs falling off. He'll be all right.
And then I kind of like it that Seattle's kind of getting a lot of notoriety right now. It's like, oh, Seattle, DVOA number one. And I'm like, okay, that's fine with me because, you know, who's going to start throwing the football to the other team at the perfect time is a slinging Sammy Darnold. That's what he's
And you know what? And he's my number three quarterback in our two quarterback fantasy league that we have. And I've had to use him because old Lamar Jackson was hurt for a while, and then the byes, and so finally next week I get to put him on the bench.
Yeah,
and but he blew up. He's done everything great for me, but I don't need him the rest of the year, so now he could just tank.
Yeah. All right, Rod and I will be back on Sunday late after. Actually, not late because it's an afternoon game, but after the Niners and Rams, we'll be probably live after that game talking about it, and then I think Brian and I are coming back on Thursday with Golden State Hoop talking Warriors and whatever's going on in the WNBA because they are in labor negotiations. So, all righty, that is it from here. So for Brad, I'm Double G. See you when we see you. Peace out.
Peace.